or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
I have to start with an admission. I'm not tech phobic. I'm really not. But because I work at home all the time, and maybe because I'm a cheapskate, I don't have a smartphone. I just got a plain old cell phone. And but I would be remiss in serving you, my dear listeners, if we didn't do a show on apps, smartphone apps, that relate to your career. So I had to bring somebody else in rather than try to BS my way through it. So fortunately, we have a person here who is named one of the top 40 technology innovators in the country and in the field of education, who is the happens to also be my wife. And so Dr. Barbara Nemko, oh, tech whiz, you're rolling your eyes. You don't consider yourself a tech whiz, Doc?
Note the sarcasm in the tech whiz. No, I am a great advocate for technology. Making it work, however, is beyond my capability. But fortunately, I have a wonderful IT department.
Well, but the IT department is not here today.
I know. This is a problem.
Is there anything? But what you can do is you can communicate. You can say in plain English. You know, you get some computer geek on the show and he's going to be talking Greek and nobody's going to understand it. At least you, who's a normal human being, should be able to, as a technology advocate, be able to speak in plain English about the top apps for one's career. Would you care to share one with us?
Well, I looked at some of the ones that you suggested I look at, and one of them was Evernote.
Yes.
Now, I've had Evernote on my iPad forever, but I've never used it.
Why?
Because there's already a preloaded something called Notes. So when I want to take notes, I take them on Notes.
Okay.
And that's fine if that's all you want to do.
So what does Evernote do that Notes doesn't do?
For the sophisticated user.
Like you.
Not like me, for the sophisticated user.
Without a smartphone.
And what I did was I asked some of my sophisticated user friends, you ever use Evernote? Why? And what I got back was a very enthusiastic, it's the greatest.
Right.
I was told that it can store and retrieve your different notes from all your different devices.
Right.
So it compiles it, because sometimes I take notes on my iPad, sometimes I take notes on my phone, sometimes I have notes on my computer, and this can pull it all together. So you could have handwritten notes on your iPad. You can even have snapshots that you took on your cell phone, and it will pull them, as well as saved emails or websites from your desktop computer. Now, if you ask me how to make all of that happen, sorry, not my area of expertise. But in terms of its utility and the enthusiasm with which my IT people greeted it, they called it the tool of choice at conferences for note-taking. In fact, my professional development person said it replaces paper and pencil, as far as she's concerned, for everything. And your notes are searchable, which is really huge, because you're taking these random notes, and then I have notes all over the place. I got notes on little cards, on big pieces of paper, in my purse, on my desk. And if you take your notes on the iPad, then you can search them and find exactly what you're looking for.
So it could be somebody gives you a business card.
You can scan it.
And if I have
a
post-it note, it can scan the handwriting.
Yes.
What does it, like, save it wherever I want, like save it in whatever file or whatever folder I want?
Apparently, or you can search it by some keyword. And also, it can record meetings. So you're sitting at a meeting and you're taking some notes, which can also be recording in at the same time. So if you want to go back and listen because you think you missed something,
recording,
you can do that too.
Auditorily?
Yeah.
And it converts it to text?
No, it just records it.
Okay.
It doesn't convert it to text. Oh. But so you're taking notes while you're listening, but I can't write fast enough, so I'm missing some stuff. I can then go back and listen to it and add to my notes, which is really handy without the old-fashioned pulling out your little tape recorder and sticking it on the table. You have your iPad there, and very easy to do.
And of course, though, you know, while Evernote may not convert it to text, that's what Dragon's about. So once you have it on your computer, you can take that lecture you were listening to half asleep, and then you want to finally actually listen to it. You can then use Dragon to translate it, not in a perfect English, but it's 98% accurate, more than enough for you to read the notes and realize it was fine for you to go to sleep during that lecture.
Now, it also, yeah, well, maybe not. It also says that you can keep the team's idea in one place, because these days, everybody's collaborating on documents. I just was working on an article, and there were four of us working on this article.
How is that different than Google Docs?
Well, that's why I've never used it, because I use Google Docs. But things like, I don't know how they put it all together. As long as you don't have to use track changes, as far as I'm concerned, is the scourge of the earth.
Why?
Because you can never get rid of them. Once somebody has tracked a change, you can send it 9 years later and you've saved it 72 times separately on your computer and we can't get rid of the changes.
There is a very simple command called accept all.
People tell me that all the time. Yeah, right. I'm sorry.
It's true.
Doesn't work. You can.
For you.
You can. No, I've had many people try to do that. You can even hit when you call up the document, it'll say final with changes, final. So you click on final. Very nice. But then when you go to send it, even though it's on final, even though you saved it in final.
You didn't listen. Accept
yes,
changes,
I tried that. Somebody told me that. I tried that. Didn't work either.
Okay. Next one. So that's
anyway,
Evernote. Great.
And it also keeps your to-do list with dates. Now, I'm not sure exactly what that means. I was assuming that meant it would put it on my calendar. Mm-hmm. But I tried that and it didn't put it on my calendar. But again, I am a big advocate and an inept user. So I will be checking further how I can make that happen.
Speaking of calendar, there's one that I dug up, which is called Cal, not as in UC Berkeley Cal, which syncs your phone's calendar with your appointments on Google. If you keep your appointments on Google, has a Google Calendar feature. And there's something called Microsoft Exchange for people who are in like the corporate environment. So Cal is an app.
But when I add a meeting to my calendar, it then adds it to my computer and my iPad. It all kind of syncs
on your phone?
Together. Yeah.
Well,
I'm always
that,
adding meetings on my phone.
Then it shows my ignorance. And yet, as I was preparing for the show, there was this highly touted, CNBC had this website called, said this article called The Top 10 Apps for Your Career, and it listed Cal. But if you say that it automatically syncs with your phone. And
I'm pretty sure it does.
Well, that's the problem with my being an idiot about computer stuff.
You know, we're all idiots about technology.
Apps, right?
I'm sorry. Technology changes so fast, and there's so much, and it's so sophisticated. I'm sure we'll have callers telling us how dumb we both are.
You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. The two dumbos who are trying to
talk about
computer apps when I don't even have a smartphone. But Barbara
Which
does.
Which is so irritating. I wanted to text you yesterday and I couldn't do it. You've got to get a smartphone.
It's $1,000 a year. I'd never use it. I'm always at home.
Yes, you would.
Why? What? Tell me. You know me very well. How would Martin Nemco benefit from having yet another device?
But it's not another device. It is still your phone, but it does all these other things, like it enables you to get text messages from your wife when she's trying to tell you something. Oh, please, I call you on your cell phone when you're in the car. You never answer it, ever, ever.
But that has nothing to do with it. If I have a smartphone, so it won't make me answer it. Hopefully not.
It'll ding for whatever reason.
So does my phone ding.
But
okay,
you don't pick it up, so I don't know what it's dinging.
You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco, and we are talking about career apps, which you can go on to another app. I'm excited about Evernote. Essentially, you can merge all of your documents, handwritten or whatever, into one place in your computer.
Okay, so I looked at Glassdoor.
Oh, yeah.
I really like that. What goes on there depends on what the employers submit, because everybody submits in a slightly different format, but it did seem to list jobs.
Well, let me give it a little bit. It's like Yelp for work. It's reviews of every workplace. So it's people who work there, and they can say what a crapola place it is. It can say their salaries. It could be job applicants who write down, hey, you were going to interview at Glassdoor. These are the questions they're going to ask you. So it is like all the inside information about workplaces. Now, please
interesting.
Continue.
Because that's not what I saw when I looked at Glassdoor.
This is really the blind leading the blind. Continue.
What I saw was a site that puts together all of the jobs that the person might be looking for and lists the responsibilities and the qualities that they are looking for in a successful candidate, what the benefits are.
It may say that about a particular workplace, but I don't know about individual jobs.
No, it did.
Maybe we need to go to the phones.
It did with individual jobs.
Dear listeners, we are given a microphone here, and I know a lot about career stuff. Barbara knows a lot about education and life and whatever. And we may need some help. We're arguing about what in the world Glassdoor does. I insist that it's mainly about inside dirt on what it's really like to work for a company. Barbara thinks it's some job aggregator thing. Anybody got some help for us here? Or even if you've got a favorite app that you yourself relates to career that you would like to share with the dear listeners of KELW, the phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, Barbara Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. You want to say more about Glassdoor, or you want to talk about another app?
Well, what I liked about it is you can sign up for notifications for similar jobs. You're looking for a particular job.
All of them. Those alerts are on every job, like whether it be Simply Hired or Indeed, or you know, you can sign up on almost all job sites now for alerts.
I haven't looked for a job in a long time.
Well, maybe you need
to. I don't know.
You're supposed to be the technology expert, and with your technology expertise. Maybe we need to replace you. You need to look for another job.
I am not the technology expert. I am the technology advocate. And if you want to talk about sites for schools, now we have a conversation.
Tell us one. Just one site
Nepris
for schools.
Nepris is my favorite. My new absolute favorite.
It's a disgusting name. It already sounds like
it's a loser.
I
don't know why Nepris. They called it that.
Sounds like a drug that has side effects from diarrhea to death. You know, on TV they show these drugs. Okay, what's
Are you done?
For the moment. What's Nepris?
Well, good. It's Nepris.com. They have interviewed people who have particular jobs about how skills that we teach in school are used in that job. So, for example, I'm a middle school math teacher, and I'm about to teach mixed fractions. I can go on Nepris and find an interview that's been archived with someone who's an architect explaining how the architect uses mixed fractions, or an engineer and how the engineer uses it. So if I'm trying to explain to kids the answer to the ever-popular question, why do I need to know this? Here's a professional, right. Not me telling you why you need to know it, but somebody who actually uses it on the job. They have all these archived interviews for free, folks, no cost.
Wow.
Google Nepris.com, and you can search the entire bank of archived interviews. If you want to live talk to a professional, there's a fee. I think it's $99 a year for a teacher, unlimited.
Nothing.
And that way you're designing a project. You can talk to a doctor. How do you use this? One wonderful thing that we have done, it was before Nepris, but one of our teachers has a brother who's a doctor in North Carolina. So she's teaching body systems in elementary school. Mm-hmm. Instead of saying, okay, open your science book and let's read about the digestive system, she talks to her brother on Skype with the kids, and he describes four patients who are sick. Mm-hmm. Here are the symptoms. Mm-hmm. Now the kids have to break into groups over each patient and, starting with the sick patient's symptoms, figure out what body system was involved, what might be going wrong, how you might fix it. And through that, they're learning all about the individual systems, but they're excited because now they're going to report back to the doctor on what they've concluded is the diagnosis and the appropriate treatment. Well, not everybody happens to have a brother who's a doctor in North Carolina. So if I don't have somebody like that, I can go to Nepris and say, I want to talk to a physician, and this is what I want to plan, and have that physician chat with my class. And you could do that multiple times with multiple people, or the same doctor could, during the length of the project, let's say it's a 6-week project, could check back with the kids. And how are you doing? And what did you find? Did you consider this? So it's really powerful for kids to see why they're learning things in school and how they'll use them.
Sounds good. Nepris is
N like Nancy, Epris.com.
We have callers on the line who are trying to help us from our tech lightness. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. Help us. Give us a lifeline.
Hi.
So
Glassdoor, you're both right.
Oh, good.
It is.
Oh, I like you. Thank
where
you.
You can look up jobs, but you can also look up interview questions and get feedback from people who actually work there. So, for example, I was curious about Pixar, and I got there are about 47 people who posted about their experience there. And it also showed open positions. So you're both right.
You're awesome. How
Yay.
Great for us to be right. And
how
for you
rare
to,
is
to,
that?
And to weigh in. Thank you so much for the call. We have more. Let's go to the next line. Welcome to Work with Marty and Barbara. What is, are you going to help us?
Yes, I am. A little bit follow-up to the last caller.
Good.
Also about Glassdoor, and the last caller was, in fact, correct that you were both correct. But wait, there's more.
If we act now, you'll get 40 of our favorite country western hits, which we subscribe.
Exactly. I've been using Glassdoor for a very long time, and originally I went in with the belief and the hope that it was a very neutral, unbiased, objective reporting source like Consumers Reports. That was my mistake. It never intended it to be, and it wasn't. It is, in fact, as you say, more like Yelp, which is to say they will accept the advertising to post a company's job. You have to pay. Also, if there has been a discussion about a company's policies or comments, the company has the last word.
Yeah.
So
I think that's actually fair. So, you know, there are very often most of these sites, like Yelp as well, they disproportionately will get disgruntled people because otherwise they don't take the time. And so sometimes it is, they could be, let's say, an employee who is a horrible employee and they get fired and they go and rip a new butt for the company. It seems it's only appropriate to not have censorship. And, you know, you say the last word, the company can respond and then the person can respond again, or more people, the collective wisdom, the crowdsourcing that accrues from all the people who worked, say, at Apple or Pixar can comment. So I think that's where, you know, a thousand voices ultimately gets us closer to the truth. What do you think?
I like it. Again, this is my thing. I had hoped it would be more like Consumer Reports, that you could get an objective last word on it. But that was my thing. So if they never claimed to be that, it was just my hope.
Right.
But so here's what I can say based on using it. If you see a company that has a really bad review, mm-hmm. you can be sure that they're being honest. If you have a company that has a good review, maybe that's a really good company to work with, or maybe they've worked very hard to get their review up.
That's where I disagree. Again, as I said, I know very often people are disgruntled. We live in a world where there's a tremendous tendency to not take responsibility. And so if you get dinged or whatever, the company could be great, and you're going to go and you're going to be ruthless in ripping them. So I think I really love, you know, I am not somebody who really values, you know, Consumer Reports, and I do read it, I subscribe to it, but it's usually based on one or two people's opinions who are experts. Let's take something like wine. I can't tell. I have retarded taste buds. People don't like when I use the word retarded. I don't care. That's literally retarded. Means slowed. I have retarded taste buds. And some expert who's a wine expert, a panel of wine experts who are rating wines, you know, and they say, oh, you really can tell the difference. You should spend $20 on this because it's worth much more than $2 chuck. That's not relevant to me. I would rather have a larger sample of real live users. Same with audio. I'm a professional musician, and yet I can't tell the difference beyond like $200 speakers. But if you go read an audio expert's review of speakers, they're going to wax rhapsodic over some $2,000 speaker. That's less useful to me than crowdsourced average people. That's why I like when I read books. I go to Amazon, and I'm less interested in the expert review than all the reader, the collective wisdom of all the reader reviews. So I think we've been deifying the notion of the expert reviewer. Anyway, I want to thank you very much for the call. Let's take one more call before we go back to apps. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. What's on your mind?
Hi, Marty.
Hi.
Congratulations on your blog and the show. I think it's just awesome.
Thank you.
I really enjoy it.
Thank you.
But I also want to push you a little bit on smartphones.
Sure.
Great. Thank you.
I'm an old guy, too.
I'm not that. It's not that I'm old. It's that I don't. I work from home.
Yeah, well, first of all, the most important thing here is that Mrs. Nemco wants you to do it, obviously.
That's the only, you know, happy wife, happy life, you mean?
Yeah, exactly.
I like this guy.
But I got pushed, because I know you have a daughter from listening to your show.
We do, indeed. And she has a smartphone, for sure.
I'm sorry?
And she has a smartphone, for sure.
Yeah, but they live on texts.
Right.
So I got pushed to it, because they don't do email the way probably you and I do. They live in a text world. And if I want to be a part of their world, I do texts.
They email too. No, I use Pony Express. Is that still current?
Yeah, exactly.
And smoke
and
signals.
I got the phone, I was kind of surprised. I use there's a maps function, That's awesome. I'm new to Berkeley. I'm new to this area.
Oh, maps are amazing on the internet. I cannot believe Google Maps, directions from anywhere to anywhere, or GPS.
Yeah.
All that stuff's the best.
Yeah, it's awesome. And
I have all that on my phone. I mean, I'm on my computer. If I'm home most of the time, if I work from home, and when I'm not working with clients, I'm writing. Why do I need to spend $1,000 a year on a smartphone?
And you're out somewhere, and you want to know where the other thing is.
Absolutely.
That's what my GPS is for, my car.
I would print the directions.
That's what my GPS is for.
And if you're walking, you're somewhere, you're in downtown San Francisco, and you're not sure where to go.
The more I use it, the more apps I'm finding. And I'm not, you know, I'm not a young, trendy guy. But I'm finding it more and more helpful.
Anyway, thank you.
And
you didn't even talk about the fact that when you have grandchildren and your children send you pictures.
This is a career show.
Which they can't do on your stupid old flip phone.
It's a career show. What the heck does this have
to do
with
talking
anything?
Apps. This was your
career
idea to talk apps.
I said career apps. Dear caller, thank
you
very
caller.
Much.
What,
now, why do you like my blog? You know, why do you appreciate? You said you like my blog. What's the deal?
I'm less liberal than most people from Berkeley, and I find that it's very straight and very honest in a way that most of the stuff I read isn't.
I appreciate that. I do try.
And I've shown it to the kids, and the kids love, like, there was a top 10 things blog. You know, I drive Toyotas for all the reasons that you gave.
Yeah.
And there's just been a series of blogs that have been just so direct and so on point.
I appreciate that.
And it's hard to find that stuff in other places. I'm telling you, I actually go out of my way to listen to the show on Sunday morning.
And thanks. Wow. I'll send you the check for this endorsement, you know.
You promised that if I called and said that.
That's right. We set this up years in advance. Anyway, on my smartphone.
I'm just thinking it's rare that we get a caller who makes us both happy at the same time in the same call, but you've done it today.
Yeah, well, anyway, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. By the way, my blog, I'm an addicted person. I do blog every day. I write every day for Psychology Today and a couple times a week for Time, time.com, and I post links all there as well as my own little weird musings about whatever, and I do try to not be restricted by the orthodoxy of what is politically correct. I'm not a right-wing guy at all, but I'm not as scared as I am when I'm listening, talking on KALW, where I have to be careful. Anyway, my blog is martinemco.blogspot.com, or just Google Marty Nemco. Okay, so let's talk about another app. The topic that we're doing here is talking about computer apps for your career, not your grandchildren. Oh, wait a minute, I have a better idea. I'm in the mood for something else. No, let's do one more app, and then I have a surprise for you.
Okay. How about Hidden Jobs?
Good. Tell me about it.
Hidden
Jobs, I don't know that one.
You told me to look at it,
I think. But I don't know. I identified it, but I don't know it. I just heard of it, but I...
Okay. So the idea is that 80% of jobs are never advertised. So
right.
Hidden Jobs purports to tell you about jobs that you wouldn't otherwise find out about. It's a nationwide site, but you can put in your state, and it's going to tell you what jobs are available. Except that, having done that, I'm looking at California Hidden Jobs, and the second job that's listed says, New Beginnings Surrogacy Services is hiring 15 people in Massachusetts. So just, yes?
I only researched it enough to know one line about it. It doesn't list jobs. It lists clues in news media that there would likely be jobs. So it looks through newspapers and looks for companies that are expanding. So if they just announced that they're building a new plant in Dubuque, it would say, hey, this is likely a company you want to look at because they're expanding. Or you might want to go, you know, they may not be advertising jobs yet, but you can go and, contact the, Ace Zipper Company. And they're in Dubuque, and that way you can get access before the jobs gets listed. Also, company press releases, just it's a way to get in the door earlier.
Well, interestingly, because it says here it was very, very specific about jobs. It says, for
example, must be a different Hidden Jobs one. That wasn't the one. I certainly don't need. We don't need to talk about another stupid website with job listings. There's zillions of them. That's what you're talking about. Indeed, and Simply Hired, and Monster, and of course Craigslist. Those are job listings. But this Hidden Jobs one, what was interesting about it is that it aggregates information about employers from the news media that are likely in hiring mode.
Okay, fine.
What can I tell you? Sometimes I agree with you and sometimes I don't. That's why we were on together. It's, respectful disagreement. Somebody I don't usually disagree with, I'll just explain it this way. Jeffrey Givens is doing a one-woman show called Retard, because she was called retarded as a child, not only by the kids, but by the teachers. And Joanne Marr was kind enough to invite her to come on the on her show. We're going to be taping it after the show to talk about that show, by the way, which is going to be at Wisteria Ways. It's in Oakland. It's a lovely big brown shingle near the Berkeley-Oakland border, where this wonderful woman named Ann Emmerich, she has for years now had these house concerts or house shows where 50 people, it fits 50 people, and she has seen our show, seen the show, and was kind enough to ask Jeffrey and me to do I accompany on the show, and she's the piano accompanist, and she's the singer. But while she's here, because after the show we're going to be recording this half-hour interview with Joanne, I figure while Jeffrey is here, might as well have her do one song here that's related to work. So let me explain, you know, what's going to go on, and then I'll introduce Jeffrey. I do think that one of the previous call talked about that I'm very direct and honest, and I am. And I don't like the endless, what I call media ha-ha reporting about career stuff. People, oh, yes, I was an unemployed truck driver, and now I'm a movie star. And everybody talks about, all you need to do is work hard and follow your passion, and it's going to be fine. And, you know, you watch Oprah, and that's all you see, or you watch these shows, is somebody who became a star, and they always interview stars. We don't hear about the millions of people who try to be stars and are in Section 8 welfare housing and broke. I know, for example, a magician, many magicians who love it, and they spend 20 or 30 years mastering a very difficult craft, and they are making less money than if they had worked at McDonald's, especially if you subtract the courses, all the costs of their tricks and their training and their traveling and all the rest of it. So there is a song that is a no BS song about what it's really like in the world of entertainment. And it's a song, you know, about most actors when they're trying to get jobs. There's no tenure. There's no stability of employment. You go to cattle calls, and there are hundreds of people. And I remember Jeffrey Givens herself, when she auditioned for a semi-professional production of Les Mis, there was a one-hour appointment slot. There were over 100 people for that one-hour appointment slot. There were over 1,000 people who auditioned eventually for that one production of Les Mis. Is that right?
I don't know how many people auditioned for, but probably over 1,000, and eventually 400 people were called back.
Called back means call back for a second audition, and only 32 were cast.
Yeah.
That's the reality. That's not Oprah. That's the reality. And there is a song from a fairly recent show called The Last 5 Years, which is about one of these cattle call auditions. And in the cattle call audition, the auditor, that's the person who's running the audition, is kind of hard-bitten, and he just, you know, calls the next one and has her sing. And, of course, she's very nervous because there's 1,000 other people auditioning for the stupid part, and she's worried if she's going to be able to afford her own apartment or have to go back live with her parents. It's really high stakes for her. And so she auditions, and she's very nervous. And then after about 10 seconds, he tells her, stop. And then she goes home in the song and talks to her dad about the frustrations of what it's like. Then she goes back into another audition singing the same song. And now Jeffrey Givens is going to... Yeah, and Jeffrey Givens is going to sing Climbing Uphill from The Last 5 Years. Jeffrey, first of all, Jeffrey Givens, welcome to Work with Marty Nemke. Welcome back. You've been on and we're much beloved. We got a ton of emails the last time, so welcome back.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
All right, next. Who's next? Oh, I see you. Jeffrey Givens. All right, Jeffrey, what you got for us?
I will be singing, what's it called? When You Come Home to Me.
Oh, okay, let's hear it. What do you got?
When you come home to me, I'll wear a sweeter smile and hope that for a
all right, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm climbing uphill, Daddy, climbing uphill. I'm up every morning at 6 and standing in line with 200 girls who are younger and thinner than me, who have already been to the gym.
I'm waiting 5 hours in line and watching these girls just coming and going in bodies that I'll never have till my number is finally called. When I walk in the room, there's a table of men, always men, usually gay. Who've been sitting like I have and listening all day to 200 girls belting as high. I should have told them I was sick last week. They're gonna think this is the way I sing. Why is the pianist playing so loud? Should I sing louder? I'll sing louder. Maybe I should stop and start over. I'm gonna stop and start over. Why is the director staring at his crotch? Why is that man staring at my resume? Don't stare at my resume. I made up half of my resume. Look at me. Don't look at that. Look at me. No, not in my shoes. Don't look at my shoes. I hate these freaking shoes. Why did I pick these shoes? Why did I pick this song? Why did I pick this career? Why does this pianist hate me? If I don't get the call back, I can't go to Crate and Barrel with Mom to buy a couch. Not that I want to spend a day with Mom, but Jamie needs space to write. Since I'm obviously such a horrible, annoying distraction to him, what's he gonna be like when we get married? And once again, why am I trying so hard? These are the people who cast Linda Blair in a musical. Jesus Christ, I suck, I suck, I... I suck. When finally you come home to...
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Jeffrey Givens in... Climbing uphill.
Thank you.
And thank you very much. Okay. That one is a sincere one, unlike the auditors. Thank you very much. Okay. Barbara Nemco. You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. We just took advantage of a one-time opportunity and had Jeffrey sing a work-related song, which indeed does, I think, reflect, alas, the difficulty of landing a job in today's market, not just in entertainment, but in many other fields, even if you're quite good. So, but the main topic is we're talking about apps for your computer, that for your phone, that help you with your career. Barb, you got another one for us?
Simply Hired.
Oh, well, that's what we talked about. Indeed and Simply Hired, and those are what are called job aggregators. They take all of the ads that are on individual websites from companies and especially from Monster and Craigslist and the rest and put them in one place. What else do you want to say about it?
And what I liked about that is you start with the kind of job you're looking for,
sure,
and it will send all the jobs like that. Plus,
right,
it will alert you to other jobs similar to that near the city that you would like to
absolutely
work in.
Searchable by zip code.
Yep.
And again, though, that is a category that came out about 4 or 5 years ago where everybody was sick and tired of job seekers going to individual websites like Monster and Career Builder and Craigslist, and what they've done is they've simply aggregated them all and put them in one website so you can search for any keywords, any zip codes for advertised jobs. But remember, again, because it's so easy to find those jobs, it means that millions of people are doing it, and that means that there's going to be many more applicants, and that ever more is the reason why it's important to go the back door and look for employers or through your connections or build networks through meetups or whatever to try to get in from the back door, because the front door is a very crowded one indeed. You got one more app for us?
Well, the other one for education jobs, of course, is EdJoin, EdJoin,
sure,
and that lists any job in school districts. In fact, you can't apply anymore on paper. You can't apply by calling. Everything is online through EdJoin, but that's where you'll find in all school districts in the state of California any job that's available.
Got one more for us or no?
I don't.
I have one more. I have mixed feelings about mentioning these things. It's called interview prep questions. It's good because certainly it has simulated questions and sample answers, and they turn into like flashcards, and you can test yourself or whatever, and that's fun. But I've always have a little ambivalence about offering advice around how to kind of get around the legitimate, you know, how to prepare for an interview and have these mock answers that are made out of BS. You know, they're not really the answers. They're just, you know, answers that will make you look better than you deserve to look relative to the other applicants who are answering honestly. Now, of course, we live in an ever more escalating world where everybody's getting stupid interviewing, not stupid, but I consider them unethical in some ways. Well, let me not say it that way. Let me say it this way. Ideally, and maybe I'm being too idealistic here, we should be hiring the best candidate for the job. And in fact, if just like studying for the SAT and paying for an SAT prep course gives you some advantage in terms of objectivity, you know, how good you really are, if you're going and you're, let's say, you're a rich person and you can afford a high-end, you know, job search coach who preps you on every little aspect of the interview and redoes your resume and so that you sound like a genius and is brilliantly written and it's organized, all you're doing really is ensuring that an employer is going to hire somebody less qualified just because you had the money or whatever to go through all that, rather than somebody who honestly portrayed themselves in terms of their interviewing skills, their resumes, or whatever. But there is that, you know, since we're talking about apps and an attempt to strike some measure of balance, I thought I would mention interview prep questions, because indeed that's the way the world is going now, where everybody is using these various techniques to, frankly, obfuscate who they really are and make themselves seem like gold, even if they're only gold-plated. Anyway, enough of apps. Let's turn to...
I would like to just challenge that in one sure. little part. I think there are many people who get extraordinarily nervous about going to interviews and may not have other people around them who can help and kind of... give them a trial run. And so to have a site where they can really prepare a little bit, I don't think that that's going to yield the wrong candidate for the job. There are lots of these prep questions, 30 ways to prepare, 10 questions you need to know how to ace, blah, blah, blah. But even some of these basic things that people don't know, one of them called 30 tips to prepare, it starts off with dressing accordingly. People don't know that. And it is such a turnoff if you happen to walk in and you are inappropriately attired for that workplace that people will hear you through a lens that is not flattering to you.
I have less problem with advice to go and dress appropriately for the job. This website is about giving you sample answers to have mock answers that don't reflect your truth, but are answers that will impress the employer. That's my big problem. And in fact, the people who get, of course we get nervous in interviews, but everybody has got somebody that they can do a mock interview. I'm not saying you can't practice interviewing with somebody before you go in the interview. Have your mother or your lover or your former coworker or somebody at church or whatever. You can, you know, certainly have them pretend to be the interviewer and ask you questions. That's not a problem at all. That's being prepared. That's great. It's when you're being given answers. Hey, if they ask you what's your greatest weakness, say this. That's what that app does.
Well, people who rely on what's your greatest weakness as a way in which to hire people, they deserve what they get. That's a dumb question. If you're being interviewed for a job and you're part of that is merely to test your speaking skills and your thinking skills.
That's the point.
But there, I don't think
if you're giving a scripted answer,
because there are follow-up questions. I don't think that that's going to so skew the interview that they're going to hire somebody who's unfit for the job.
It's not changing the world, but I feel that net for the world, giving lists of sample interview questions and answers that will please the employer, net is unfair to the workers who are coming up with their own answers rather than memorizing some scripted answer from some website.
And by the third person who gives the same scripted answer from the website, I think the employers are going to know that.
Not everybody's going to view this. There's thousands of these interview mock answers thing. They're not going to get the same one all the time. The point is, it's I think a net negative for the world. Let's
okay,
change the topic.
Okay, it's good. We've agreed to disagree.
Really, you really disagree? Or you're just arguing for the sake of it?
I really disagree.
I can't believe it. Anyway, let's first of all, let me give out the phone number for a different reason, dear listeners. Now, one of the major purposes of this show is to do what I call workovers. So if you or someone you love has got a work problem, whether you're 16 or 76, whether you're unemployed and well-employed and still miserable, I almost always can help, with Barbara's assistance especially. So the price is right. It's, I like to call it, zero zippo nada. You know, I call them workovers, and I will not pummel you, but feel free to call if you've, this is the time before the lines get all lighted up, and then I always at the end of the show say, I'm sorry, we can't get to you. So if you've been thinking about calling or would like to call about your work-related problem, the phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And in the meantime, do you want to say something? You want me to propose some, look, offer little tips and things?
Why don't you offer little tips? Because that's why people listen to this show.
Okay. Well,
except for the people who want to hear us argue.
Yeah. Well, let's see if you can argue with this one. If we argue with this, we're getting a divorce. There's no question.
Threat or promise? Wait a minute.
Damn you. You know, everybody talks about stress reduction, but the kind of things that they tell you to do just are not real for most people. Go on a two-week meditation and fast retreat. Go get a high colonic. It'll cleanse your system. You know, go, you know, and find Jesus, you know, or become a Buddhist or whatever. Here is a great stress reducer that takes no time. Exhale slowly, even doing it just once. One deep breath. And then exhale twice as slowly as the amount of time. So take 1 second to inhale and 2 seconds to exhale. That single momentary thing will reduce your stress. No side effects, no cost, no time. Do you disagree, Dr. Nemco?
Well, I can't tell you that I'm feeling like a wet noodle having just done that.
Do it another couple of times, damn it.
And maybe don't exhale at all. Keep it until you expire.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, Jeffrey.
Who is telling you to get a high colonic or something like that to relax?
Thank you, Jeffrey.
I don't know people like that.
There is this guy. I'm going to save him because he's a friend of a friend who's a very famous person who has sold millions of copies of his books, who say that part of the equation for both stress reduction and all kinds of betterment to your body is to do a cleanse. He is really, he's a typical Marin guy, but he has sold millions of copies of his books and absolutely advocates body cleanses for many purposes, of which only one is that you will be more relaxed and de-stressed.
Couldn't I just go on a juice diet for a day? I think that'd be more fun.
I will stick by my deep breaths and take twice as long to exhale idea. The phone number.
Meditation. It seems like that's inexpensive and calming.
But what I have learned is that it's calming. You're essentially going to sleep, and then by the time you wake up.
I know, I loved that part of it.
And by the time you wake up, yes, when we get up, we're kind of still groggy for 5 minutes. But 10 minutes later, if you're a person who's very stressed by nature, and then you go and you meditate your 20 minutes or whatever it is, I have found with my clients at least that they're back in action. They're back just the way they were half hour later. It doesn't have enough enduring effect. I know you were in an argumentative mood, but Dr. Nemco, you indeed tried medication. Maybe that's the answer to hell with meditation. Medication is the answer. A little Xanax, that'll calm you right down.
I am a pharmacist's daughter.
You had an experience with meditation. Did you experience calming effects after you woke up from your, quote, nap, meditation / nap?
No, it made me nervous because I had wasted 20 minutes.
Thank you. So what do you do? Why all of a sudden, when I'm saying that there's a time-effective approach to stress management, which is deep breaths and exhalation, find a way to mention something that you yourself have rejected wildly.
I took a deep breath, and that seemed like the silliest thing ever, and then I can be equally as stressed after meth. It made me stressed trying to exhale more slowly in order to be unstressed.
Let me give out the phone number again. If dear listeners, if you have a problem, not with breathing, but with your career, and I invite you to take a deep breath and call. I may joke, but I definitely take your problem seriously. If you have a work problem, we do what are called workovers here. Give a call. This is the time to do it. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134.
I think everybody turned their radio off because they couldn't figure out what this show was about.
Yes. Well, I'm still trying to figure it out, too. I want to talk about something called co-coaching. I love this. Michael Edelstein, who is one of the world's leading experts in cognitive behavioral therapy, and I, for the last 7 years, about every 2 to 3 weeks, we, on a Friday morning, we take an hour in which, by phone, I will take the first half hour and be his coach, and he tells me whatever issues he has, it could be about, whether it could be, relationship issues or career issues or health issues or money issues, whatever it is, and I am his coach, counselor, consultant, whatever. And then in the second half hour, we switch roles, and I then share whatever issues I'm dealing with, and he provides the counsel. It is very, the best thing about it is that it is not hierarchical. When you pay a career counselor or a therapist or whatever, you're giving money, very often big money. He or she is the one in control with all the power, and you're this kind of, this person who's being helped by them. And even no matter how collaborative they are, there still is that hierarchical relationship. But in co-coaching, we're each equally empowered in every session. And so I certainly commend it. You got to have the right person. Michael Edelstein is a great listener, and he's very smart. So when he does give advice, it's very intelligent. So if somebody is, you got to pick somebody who is both smart, a great listener, patient, asking good questions, and is benevolent by nature. I've learned that we, just like we vary in height, weight, intelligence, proclivity to depression, we also vary enormously on how kind we are. There are the saints among us, and there are the sociopaths who just love getting off on, hurting people, like the trolls who will troll on the internet. Most people somewhere in the middle. But I think it's an underappreciated asset. So as you decide who's going to be your co-coach, not only should they be intelligent, not only should they be good listeners, but they should be truly benevolent or at least fairly high on the continuum of benevolence if you really expect them to be helpful. Barbara, do you care to disagree with that one?
It's a very interesting and novel concept. Is this something that you read about, or did you and Michael just decide one day, let's help each other?
This actually came out of the hippie 60s, when there was a rebellion against all authority, and they said, screw the psychiatrists, screw the psychologists, screw all of them with their $200 an hour rates, screw it, we're going to coach each other. So it came out of a non-hierarchical move in the 60s, which was sat dormant in my brain for a while until I said, yeah, it's a pretty cool idea.
So it's kind of like talking to a friend. It's what they used to call it.
Except that it's structured, so there is a half hour designated for each of you. And it's not just a friend, but a friend with those specific attributes. Because there are some friends who you like laughing with or like going sports with or whatever. It's a particular kind of friend.
I like it. And do you always stick to the half hour time limits?
No, it maxes at an hour, but sometimes, for example, if he feels he's gotten all he needs in 20 minutes, we switch. And so I would say the average amount of time the whole thing takes is 45 minutes. We allow an hour, and it's not rigid at all. No parameters.
And are there ever times that you say, actually, I don't need any help with anything, life's kind of coasting along pretty well, and
yes,
this can be all about you?
And yes, but we don't want to let that be an option, because then it just, it takes away from that 50-50. So when I occasionally feel that way, and I have, probably once in every 6 or 8 weeks, and I'm grateful I have no issues, I say, well, then, Michael just asked me some questions. So he'll ask me questions about different aspects of my life, my relationships, my work, my, money, hobbies, my theater stuff. And then somewhere along the way in discussing all those, we have something to talk about.
Interesting.
And, of course, there is a variation on this, which I have discussed on the show before, which is what I call the Board of Advisors. It doesn't have to be one-on-one. About 2 years ago, I identified, let me give out the phone number again, though. Anybody want some career help? 415-841-4134. That's the number here. Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. 415-841-4134. A couple of years ago, I decided that sometimes one-on-one is not the only vehicle that's the right vehicle. Sometimes you want to have a group, not a big group. I get impatient in groups of 8 or 10. But having 4 or 5 people as a group to get the group's input on whatever can be very useful. And this I learned from Barbara Scherer. Barbara Scherer, who was the author of Wishcraft and started these success teams, she encourages these success teams, which is generally six people, who will get together once a month or once twice a month or even once a week. And one person gets the floor for 10 minutes. And they raise whatever problem or issue they're facing, and they get the group's input on it. And they, at the end of the 10 minutes, commit to doing, you know, say, okay, thank you very much. I'm going to, in light of what you said, I'm going to do X, or I'm not going to do anything, or whatever. But so I started one. I called it the Board of Advisors, and I thought about the human beings on the planet who met all those requirements that I just said, who are benevolent and smart, good listeners, not dominating, but not too quiet either, who would contribute. I invited seven people. Six said yes. And it's been 2 years. We have not had a single dropout. We have met every month by phone, just one of those free teleconferencing services. And it's extremely valuable. And I commend that to you, Barbara Nemco. Any reactions?
It's not for me, but I think it sounds like a very cool idea.
Why would it not be for you? Because I said it. If I said it, it means it's not for you.
Number one, finding a particular hour once a month where I could guarantee be part of it would be ludicrous.
It always varies.
You change the schedule.
It's way okay. I say at the end of the hour, we do meet from 7 to 8 p.m. Usually it's Wednesday night, usually, but not always. I say, okay, who wants to propose a time for next month? And then it's the first one that everybody can, the first time that everybody can meet.
Okay. Again, my evening schedule is very varied, and I don't know that I could commit to that. Number two, I can't imagine what I would talk about. Being a fairly private person, if I want to talk to somebody about a problem I have, I talk to a particular person about that, not a whole group of people and who are all going to give me different ideas on what I should do about it.
Okay. Let's go off that. I want to get your take on a statistic that I just found. Gallup did a poll of college administrators, you know, college presidents, vice presidents, and also the general public, and also CEOs, about the following question. How well do colleges prepare graduates for work? And here was the interesting part. Guess, Barbara Nemco, what percentage of college administrators said that they think that colleges do a good job of preparing their graduates for work?
My guess would be that the college administrators would rate themselves fairly high and that the business people who hire the graduates would rate them fairly low.
I'd like you to guess what percentage of the administrators said we do a good job of preparing people for it?
75%.
96.
Whoa.
96% of college administrators said that they believe that their college well prepares graduates for work. So now let's turn to the general public. These are people who have gone to college. What percentage of the general public that's college educated in this Gallup poll said that they believe colleges prepare their graduates well for work?
45%.
14%.
Oh my God. Oh, that's amazing.
And now how about CEOs? And this is for-profit and non-profit CEOs.
5%.
11%. So we often call college professors and administrators as in ivory towers, out of touch.
Clearly.
Where could there be a better example of how out of touch they are than that 96% of those college administrators in an anonymous survey, it's not like they're doing a PR pitch in front of the media, in an anonymous Gallup survey, 96% of them believe that the colleges do a good job of preparing people for work, and only 14% of the public and 11% of CEOs do.
Those are stunning statistics.
And, of course, it's logical because so much of the smallest budget item office in the entire college campus is the career office. There are always these little portables and there's nothing there. And you go to the fundraising office or the administration offices, and you're talking about the Taj Mahal. Well, not to mention the classes, which are all tend to be theoretical, and Professor Hassenpfeffer with this research area he's just enamored of, which has nothing to do with, even if you're in a business class, you know, these case studies about models of what Walmart did in 1984 has nothing to do in the real world with what you're going to do when you get hired in the job. It's the irrelevance. It's not surprising to me that the colleges do such a terrible job of work preparation.
I'm not surprised at all. And In fact, if you talk to the individual teachers, they will tell you that their job is not to prepare people for the workplace.
Exactly.
The whole philosophy, and that's true in high schools as well as in colleges, is that we are here to provide people with a well-rounded education, not to prepare them for the workforce. So there is an actual disdain for somebody who would say, but excuse me, in the real world, all people are going to need to get jobs. So shouldn't we be doing something to prepare them? That's not the mindset.
We've talked about this so much on the radio.
Yep.
It is beyond me how any high school teacher who claims to be a liberal, who claims to care about regular people and helping them, can argue that learning quadratic equations is more important than learning how to not get screwed in a credit contract, how they can conclude that doing stochastic processing equations in chemistry is more important than how to keep your house safe from environmental bad chemicals, how anybody could say that learning the causes of the Peloponnesian War are more important than learning communication skills that avoid conflict and avoid people beating the hell out of each other. And yet those very liberal people who decry elitism in theory are incredibly elitist themselves.
Remember that the curriculum is determined generally by college professors.
That's right.
And they're usually gathered together in subject matter groups, which is the biggest part of the problem. One of the things that I always liked about Bill Daggett was he would gather groups of professionals in a variety of fields and have them pick out what skills they thought were most essential for success in the real world. So if I am just a regular person who's working, I'm not wedded to certain math skills because I'm a math professor. But if I'm a math professor and you tell me what do you think is essential, I'm going to find everything that I teach is essential, because if I find it not essential, I don't have a job. And so it's always done wrong. And that's how we've ended up with a curriculum that has so many, many, many standards that every teacher knows it's impossible to teach them all. So then we go to trying to prioritize standards, or we teach the super standards or the most important standards. It's all done, in my view, the wrong way. We need to be looking at what life is like and what skills you need to be successful in jobs, what are the generic ones and then what are the specific ones. And in the high schools, we really should be teaching the most generic ones. Everybody isn't going to be an engineer. So everybody really, in my mind, doesn't need all the math that a future engineer needs. And yet we require that. And so everybody has to take all these Algebra 1 and 2 and geometry and trigonometry and calculus. Wow. And that sets us up. That's one of the reasons why we have a dropout rate that we shouldn't be having in high school.
Well, I wish we could end on a happier note, but unfortunately, that is the end of the show. Barbara, thanks very much for being my guest on Work with Marty Nemko. I always want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do workovers on callers. And lessons I've learned from my 13 different careers. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we do find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.